It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of Solace, and today we're going to focus on one particular issue that is of great interest to Christians. We want to think about what is truth.
So true, funny how it seems, always in time, but never in line for dreams. Head over heels, went toe-to-toe, this is the sound of my soul.
The Oxford English Dictionary have declared that their word for 2016 is the word post-truth. A word which was first used in a 1992 essay by the late Serbian-American playwright Steve Tesic, which has just suddenly become very fashionable. And it basically means the idea of debate, especially political debate, being framed entirely by emotion and anything other than fact. Now, why it's become fashionable to use it just now is because the liberal elites have become a little bit upset that in votes like Brexit or the United States election, where the elites were very clearly on one side, especially the media, the art celebrities, and so on, yet the people went against. So you have to say, why did they do this? Well, it's because the people are stupid. They're no longer interested in truth. So, where do we go with this from a Christian perspective? Well, first of all, I have to say I'm slightly amused because for decades we have been taught that there's no such thing as truth, that you make your own truth, that truth is through the eye of the beholder. And all of a sudden, these people who've been teaching us that there's no such thing as truth are now complaining at, if it's true, the results of their teaching.
See, some folks say all truth is relative. It just depends on what you believe. You know, hey man, ain't no way to know for sure who God is or what's really true. But that means you believe your own statement, that there's no way to know what's really true. You're saying that that statement is true. You're killing yourself. If what's true for you is true for you, and what's true for me is true for me, what if my truth says yours is a lie? Is it still true? Come on, man.
I think there is another problem here in the way that the language is being used. Certainly online, I'm seeing people whose definition of post-truth is anything which disagrees with them, and definition of truth is what they say. So ironically, it's as relativistic as ever. I think there's also a real danger here, because there's talk now of banning things which are quote-unquote lies or post-truth. And I think that's a means of the elites and the powerful again saying, well, wait a minute, our truth is the only truth. Now, immediately, there's a reaction to this because some people will say, ah, well, don't you Christians claim that? Don't you claim your truth is the only truth? And the answer is yes, we do, but we believe that it's so true that it can stand on its own. It doesn't need us to enforce it. It doesn't need us to suppress other things. In fact, give us a free marketplace of ideas, and the truth of the gospel will stand up against any other so-called truths. So we are not afraid of truth. But I think those who are talking about post-factual politics, those who are talking about post-truth politics, I think they are. I think they want to shut down debate. I think they're horrified at the power being taken away from traditional media and very often put into social media. As Christians, we believe absolutely in truth. And for me, I'm delighted at this complaining about the lack of truth. And I think if you're a Christian, you should be too. And if you're not a Christian, you should go looking for the truth.
We've had too many words and just too many lives. Broken with those evil lies. Gotta keep the golden.
NPR national public radio in the United States did a survey in which they found that a lot of young people are unable to distinguish between what's called fake news and real news. Now, again, this is all tied in with the post-truth narrative. Fake news, people just making things up.
Can't trust the politicians, too many channels on the television. Now children dance like they've seen it all. I went on the internet and I got myself 1,000 friends. Funny, no one ever seems to call.
But I think it's even more complex than that. I think that we view truth through our own worldview narrative. And here's the problem. Confirmation bias. Through social media, you only take on board the things that appeal to you. People don't understand how complex life is, they don't understand how complex human emotions are, and they're unable to filter things because everything is being seen through just one filter, their own. So again, this is a very, very scary world where people cannot distinguish between right and wrong, between truth and lies. And again, I want to say this, those liberal elites who are complaining about post-truth, they're the same thing. You take any subject and they will filter according to their already preconceived ideas. So instead of saying, what does X plus Y equal? They've determined that it equals Z, and they will then make X and Y fit whatever suits them. And that is the problem. And you see it all the time on social media. You see it all the time in the secular media. It is becoming more rare to see contrasting views put across and people being able to rationally think and work things through. It's not just that we live in a post-truth society, we live in a post-rational society. And for those of us who are logical, made in the image of the Logos, then that creates real problems.
All this world can be so confusing when even good men choose to lie.
If you understand that you have a worldview, which I know I do, if you accept that and you grasp that, then you're much more able to discern where your biases are. If, on the other hand, you think that you don't have a worldview, that this is just the way things are, that any normal, sensible, sane person would see things this way, then you are in a most dangerous position. And that's a kind of fundamentalism. You can see it in a religious perspective, but to be honest, you really do see it in a secular, liberal, progressive perspective as well. Well, obviously, that's what progressive people will think. And alternative views are banned. And that's the danger that we're heading to.
No, I don't have all the answers for it. Just know that I adore it, and that this much is true.
Well, let's come to an example of where this kind of post-truth stuff leads, because my view is that it's going to lead to intolerance and suppression of free speech. Freedom of religion is the fundamental ground of a Western liberal democracy, and all other freedoms stem from it. And when you lose that, you're going to start losing other things. And here's an example of Milo Yiannopoulos. Milo works for the US-based web news Breitbart, which apparently has been one of the most influential in getting Donald Trump elected. He is a lead member of the alt-right movement. Now, what does that mean? Basically, it just means what it says. They are the alternative right. Basically, you've got the right-wing traditional conservatives and so on. Then I suppose you've got, you know, uber right-wing white supremacist fascists. Alt-right, they would deny that they're fascist white supremacists, although some of them, it's quite clear, are. But it's disturbing to see where that's coming from, and it'll be disturbing to see where it goes. My view personally is that fascism, communism, totalitarianism of any sort is endemic within human society and human nature. And without the leaven of Christianity, it almost will inevitably happen in the West. So why are we talking about him? Well, he was invited back to his old school, Simon Langton Grammar School for Boys in Canterbury, where he was expelled. More than 220 Langton sixth formers had signed up with their parents' consent for an event at which he was going to speak, and it was banned. Why was it banned? Well, apparently not because of pressures within the school, not from the pupils, nor from the parents. It was banned because the Department of Education's counter-extremism unit advised the school to stop it. Now, you have to stop and think about that and what it actually means. First of all, it is intolerance, it is banning of free speech, and it's also counterproductive. Because if Milo had come and spoken at the school, we'd never have heard about it. And now, everyone's heard about it. It's in all the national newspapers, and far more people will be drawn to his ideas because of that. Furthermore, those sixth-year pupils, all of them, are now going to go and Google him. They're going to go and find out more about him. He's going to get far more followers in the school. So if the idea was to limit the spread of his ideas, then it spectacularly fails. But worse than that, this very action endorses his ideas, because what it does is it proves his point that the liberal elites are out to suppress alternative points of view. Here's the thing about Milo, and I actually don't really know his views all that much, but I mean, I would say it for fascists, I would say it for communists, I would say it for anyone. I'm quite prepared to stand up and argue against. If you push things under the carpet, if you make things, you know, banned, that's the very thing that people are going to do. It's like you're walking in a park and there's a bench that's been painted white. You wouldn't even think of touching that bench until you see the sign on it, wet paint, do not touch. And that's a real temptation to go. So when people are saying bad ideas, do not listen, that's the one thing that will guarantee that they are going to listen. Some people say to me, David, aren't you concerned about the rise of the right wing and fascism? And my answer is, yes, I am. And the thing that's going to encourage that more than anyone are those of you who yell fascist at anyone who dares to disagree with you. Then you only embolden the fascists and you make far more fascists than there would have been.
Rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Now, I don't know if you go to the theatre. I love going to the theatre, especially if I've gone to New York and if I've gone to London. And one show that I would actually quite like to see is, if I was in New York again, it would be Hamilton. And it seems I'm not alone, because the new vice president-to-be, Mike Pence, decided, yep, I'm going to go and see it. And he went with his family, and it created a bit of a stir for several reasons. First of all, some in the audience booed, not just when he entered and not just when he left, but during the performance. Secondly, the actors took upon themselves to write a statement, which they read out and addressed to him directly, and, you know, saying we live in a diverse community and so on. So it's basically just giving him a row in public. Well, there's two things to say about all of that. First of all, I think what the actors did, it was done well. It was done relatively graciously, and I don't think there's really any particular problem with it, except this. It's a little bit of virtue signaling and smug superiority, because it's basically saying, this is what we're for, you're not for it at all. So, and a guy's going out with his family, he's not there on a political occasion. It's a bit hassling, but that's the way it is. I think the booing is completely out of order and incredibly intolerant. But what struck me about all of this was his reaction.
You know, when we arrived, we heard a few boos and we heard some cheers, and I nudged my kids and reminded them that's what freedom sounds like. And
this is what freedom sounds like. And I just thought that was absolutely wonderful. He just accepted that's the way it is. And then secondly, when he was interviewed on Fox News, and we'll put a link to this, he defended the right of the people to make that kind of protest, whether it was appropriate to do it there or not.
But at the end, I did hear what was said from the stage, and I can tell you, I wasn't offended by what was said. I'll leave to others whether that was the appropriate venue to say it. But
I just thought, I thought he behaved in a very dignified manner, and I think, you know, this kind of culture wars where you've got people smugly pronouncing judgments upon other people, it's not a good idea. So in this sense, well done to Mike Pence. He gets a lot of abuse. Who knows what kind of vice president he will be. But in this particular instance, he behaved with dignity. I think largely the cast of that play behaved with some degree of dignity. And I think some of the audience behaved in a shameful way.
The unthinkable has finally happened. Our nation, torn, broken. You could move to Canada, but you love your country. What can a person like you do?
What if there was a place where the unthinkable didn't happen and life could continue for progressive Americans just as before?
Now there is.
Welcome to The Bubble.
Coming in January 2017, The Bubble is a planned community of like-minded freethinkers and no one else.
I confess, sometimes we castigate liberal media and so on as being all on one side. Saturday Night Live in the United States is one of those we would say that. Well, all I have to say is kudos to them, because they did a wee sketch that, again, we'll put a link to, the kind of bubble skit about liberals in denial.
So if you're an open-minded person, come here and close yourself in.
In here, it's like the election never happened.
While who knows what the hell is happening outside in their America, the bubble will be a fully functioning city-state.
With things everybody loves, like hybrid cars, used bookstores, and small farms with the rawest milk you've ever tasted.
It's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So go and have a look at it.
The bubble is a diverse community and safe space for everyone. We don't see color here, but we celebrate it.
And unlike the rest of America, anybody is welcome to join us. One-bedroom apartments start at $1.9 million.
And it's hilarious because, like all good satire, there's a great deal of element of truth in it.
It's their America now.
We'll be fine, right here in the bubble. Join us, starting in 2017.
The bubble. It's Brooklyn with a bubble on it.
That kind of bubble reminds me of the Anglican bishop who said, I'm just so horrified about Brexit because I don't know anyone in my area who voted for Brexit. Yet he was in an area where the majority of people did vote for Brexit. What he meant was the kind of people he mixed with. And I think that's one of the problems, living life in a bubble. And by the way, Christians can do that as well. I think we do it all the time sometimes. We need to open out. If we really believe, going back to truth, that we've got the truth, then we shouldn't be scared of sharing and mixing and loving and understanding people who are very, very different from us and have very, very different views. Remember, open-mindedness and tolerance are Christian virtues.
You're right. There's nothing more lovely. There's nothing more profound than the certainty. Certainty that all of this will end.
And speaking of virtues, good old secular France, they have banned a video showing us people with Down syndrome who are basically living happy and fulfilled lives. It's a video that's been an enormous hit all over the world. Why is it banned in France? Because it may cause trauma to women who've had abortions because of Down syndrome when they see what their children could have been. So there you go, the ultimate safe space, post-truth. This is where we're at. It really is quite astonishing.
Therefore the grace of God go away. Therefore the grace of God go away. Therefore the grace of time and chance and entropy's cruel hands. So open your eyes to me. Open your eyes to me.
You know, what I find interesting about many of the quote-unquote pro-choice people is they don't want choice to be made on the basis of information. They want it to be made on the basis only of ideology and personal feeling. I think that the number of abortions would dramatically fall if people knew what abortion actually was and how it was carried out and what was done. You want to cut the number of abortions? I would suggest you show an actual abortion to most people who are considering it, and I suspect it would make a phenomenal difference.
You remember me when the west wind moves among the fields of barley. You can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold.
There's an incredible family statement from Brendan Cox, who is the husband of murdered MP Joe Cox. And again, we will link to it, but it's a beautiful description of her life. It is a compassionate and humane thing. And I think, rightly, he warns us what happens when people allow their emotions to override their rationality and their humaneness. And for me, I read this and I thought it was just an incredibly compelling piece in lots of ways. An incredibly honest piece. Let me read you something from that statement. This is what the statement says. The killing of Joe was, in my view, a political act, an act of terrorism. But in the history of such acts, it was perhaps the most incompetent and self-defeating. An act driven by hatred, which instead has created an outpouring of love. An act designed to drive communities apart, which has instead pulled them together. An act designed to silence a voice, which instead has allowed millions of others to hear it. I think that very much ties in with what we were saying before. And I think that the ultimate act, which was designed to be something which would destroy goodness, has done the opposite. And of course, we're speaking about the crucifixion. The devil and his allies, seeking to destroy the Son of God, ended up providing the means by which humanity is recreated. And I think we need to be really, really careful that we express views forcefully, yes. We express views rightly, but we need to remember that if we demonize other people, then some people will take it a step further. So from a Christian perspective, we have this incredible thing. We have this thing where we recognize that all human beings are broken, all, including us. We recognize all are sinful. We recognize all have potential for tremendous evil. But we also recognize that all are made in the image of God and that the offer of redemption is for all. And we need to remember that even when we're engaging in political debate and discussion, it's not about us winning our argument. It's about us presenting the ultimate truth, who is Jesus Christ.
Many years have passed since those summer days among the fields of barley. See the children run as the sun goes down, as you lie in fields of gold.
And finally, busy week again, and part of it was spent at the Scottish Parliament in a packed committee room with several MSPs, lots of church leaders, representatives of the Evangelical Alliance and the Lawyers Christian Fellowship, who between them, that is the Lawyers Christian Fellowship and EA, have produced a marvellous resource called Speaking Out. Now, we have an interview about that, which we will link to. It was an incredibly encouraging meeting. And this is a resource that we would commend very highly. Every church should have several copies. Teachers, lawyers, ministers, people in all kinds of work, you are going to need this. Parents, you're going to need it in terms of your schools. We can speak out. And this resource helps us and shows us how to do so in a way that is biblical, that is solid, that is firm, and that is compassionate, and that is legal. We still have great freedom in this country. We need to use it. Thank you again for listening. We shall see you next week.
Yo. part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.